in the legislative building.
Of course not.
But I think he let it be known that the Chapel Hill budget might have some problems if Mr. Friday didn't get a little more objective about this question.
Well, was it about that time that he became a little more objective? He did shift his position.
Not yet.
A little later.
When the panel of consultants report was presented to Governor Holzhauser.
Now this is in 73.
This is the
September
early 73. Fall 73.
Right.
We already knew what it was going to say.
Sure.
We hunkered down, waiting for the flak to start. The governor invited the legislature, the higher education leadership, everybody you could name, to come listen to this report.
Mm-hmm.
The panel of consultants presented the report in a couple of hour session with diagrams and charts and cost figures that were outrageous. But the whole thrust of it was that there was really no basis on which to develop a school here, and that the cost was exorbitant, and that it wouldn't meet the need anyway. And they made some rather critical comments about the leadership of East Carolina University. And I don't know whether they named names or whether it was the News and Observer that named names and pointed fingers at Wally Wills and Ed Monroe, implying incompetence.
I have a note that after the committee met with the consultants, after the state medical manpower committee met, that Gerald Arnold said he was more convinced than ever that the General Assembly would have to decide on whether ECU gets a medical school.
Yeah.
So the focus shifted right there.
Yeah, well, in the 73 session,
mm-hmm.
a study commission was set up to counterbalance what was viewed as a likely unbalanced report from the consultants.
This is what they call the Medical Manpower Committee, right?
Commission.
Commission, all right, okay.
The House chairman was Jay Huskins,
mm-hmm.
and the Senate chairman was Billy Mills.
Mm-hmm.
And while the consultants were meeting, the Legislative Commission was holding hearings around the state.
Going to the
people.
Mm-hmm.
And Jay Huskins wrote the report. And it called for expansion of medical education at East Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And was not too complimentary about the med school at Chapel Hill leadership and spirit of cooperation in a one-year program relationship. It called for the appropriation of money to start a building fund and for an operating budget increase. All of this was headed toward the 74 legislative session, which was the first even year session, I think, in the history of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And it was convening in response to budget problems. Because of the oil embargo of the Middle East. So the legislature convened in 74, early 74, with the commission report from its own study commission and the panel of consultants report issued in September 73. With some of the hue and cry about the consultant's report having died down through the fall,
mm-hmm.
except on the editorial pages of some of the papers around the Piedmont. And the question before the Appropriations Committee with Senator Ralph Scott as the Senate chairman and Carl, friend of Horton's from Gastonia.
Stewart.
Carl Stewart, chairman of the House Appropriations Committee. The question before them was what, if anything, to do. So they appointed a subcommittee that started meeting and analyzing the consultant's report, the Legislative Study Commission's report, meetings to which people like Monroe, Wools, and Jenkins had to go.
This is the Joint House and Senate Health Committee. That was the name of it, right, that one.
Mm-hmm. Appropriations Committee on Health. Mm-hmm. Joint Subcommittee. Mm-hmm. Jay Huskins was on it. Mm-hmm. Billy Mills was on it. Don't remember whether Gerald was or not. But he was involved. Mm-hmm. The whole question was, is there a better way than a four-year school? There's going to be something down there. Now, what's the best compromise that everybody can live with? Mm-hmm. By then, Chris Fordham was dean, succeeding Ike Taylor, who succeeded Barry Hill at Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. He was totally anti-ECU. Mm-hmm. Public, making speeches, being quoted. So much so that some people began to lose belief in what he had to say. This subcommittee of the Joint Appropriations Committee decided to have public hearings in the legislative building. And the Board of Governors was invited to present, and the ECU proponents were invited to present. And the main reason for that was that the panel of consultants report to the Board of Governors back in the fall of 73 had led to a Board of Governors paper on the question, which 7 or 8 members of the Board of Governors wrote a minority response disagreeing with the majority. So the minority report of the Board of Governors members was aired at this legislative hearing. On one side of the hearing room are Bill Friday, his staff, the leadership of the Board of Governors, Watts Hill, Victor Bryant,
mm-hmm. all the Durham group,
people from the former Board of Trustees of the University of North Carolina.
Well, this was in January 74, right?
Yep. On the other side of the hearing room, not occupying quite as many seats, were people like Mutt McCoy, Dave Wichard, Andy Best, several other members of the Board of Governors who had signed the minority report, along with the Farm Bureau, the State Grange, Lions Club, JC's, all of the civic organizations you could mobilize that we haven't spoken about at all, but that Wally and I spent a number of evenings talking to in 71, 72, and 73, mm-hmm. all over eastern North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Had mayors there from all over eastern North Carolina, had some doctors there like Ernest Ferguson, mm-hmm. Lennox Baker, who had retired from orthopedics at Duke and became one of our most vocal advocates. All of these people And the strangest thing was standing just outside the door into the hearing room, which was like a small auditorium. Mm-hmm. ECU proponents on one side, opponents on the other. I was kind of orchestrating the lineup of the proponents on one side of the door, and Friday, Dawson, and Joyner were on the other side of the doorway orchestrating the lineup of the opponents.
Interesting.
There was some frigid air that you could feel in that atmosphere.
Outside the door.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Icy cloud.
An interesting afternoon.
Yeah. I would imagine.
Another time, that Joint Subcommittee of Appropriations, for some reason, met in a motel, I think in High Point or Greensboro. Monk Harrington had a plane. He was in the Senate. He and his pilot picked me and Dave Wichert up at the airport here. We flew to Laurinburg, picked up Mutt McCoy, and we all went to this meeting. And I sat outside in the little entry room next to the motel office. They were meeting in a conference room from, this was on a Sunday, mm-hmm. from about 10 o'clock in the morning until 5 or 6 in the evening. Chris Fordham was there part of the time. Neither one of us got called to come in and offer any testimony, but we were invited to come in and eat lunch. Jay Huskin's wife, Mildred, entertained me throughout that few hours while I was sitting there sweating blood. Interesting time.
Interesting time.
The bill that Stuart and Scott managed to get through the Appropriations Committee, known as the Scott-Stuart Bill, I think occurred in late February 74. It was viewed as somewhat of a compromise, but clearly the handwriting was on the wall. Horton was very instrumental in getting several people to get off the fence and vote for the bill, and getting several others to absent themselves from the room when the vote was taken
so they wouldn't be
recorded against it.
And this was in February.
Late February.
Right. Vote was that 49 to 28.
I think the Joint Appropriations vote was not quite that numerous.
No.
But I'm not sure. Well, I've got a record of who voted for it and who against it. Several people voted against it who later claimed they were for it. Uh-huh. But I've got the recorded vote.
Horton has a partial record of it, too. He was trying to... He would be interested. He said he would be very interested in finding out all the names. I said that I had heard somewhere that there was a list of the vote. I thought I saw it in the information and publications file cabinet, but I couldn't find it. I just said that it says that the vote was 49-28. After approving the bill, the committee voted 40-39 to incorporate the bill's provisions in the state's regular budget appropriations bill package.
Yeah, that kept it from being debated on the floor when the appropriations bill was finally voted on late in the spring, about 3 months later. Although there was a move mounted to break it out of the package.
That failed. So this added the second year and increased the size of the class and worked toward setting up a clinical base for third and fourth year students, right?
Yeah, and some more money for building.
Well, that things got watershed then, right?
Yeah. Things got momentarily very bright.
Yeah.
And then the stuff hit the fan a few weeks later. Friday called Jenkins. We went up and met with Friday and his staff. I think Fordham was there. Fordham was not there at that meeting. Friday told Jenkins that he would like for, that this was a feasible direction to pursue. We left. We talked to Jenkins all the way back to Greenville. He said, well, we have to take the man at his word. I said, no, you don't. There's something, Wally and I both, there was something screwy going on. Sometime in June, we get the word to come back. Friday says when we get up there and Fordham and his staff are sitting there that he's gotten written notice from the Association of American Medical Colleges that a 2-year program would not be accredited as a freestanding 2-year program. And therefore, to meet the mandate of the legislative action, he had to appoint Fordham to head up the planning effort. And he would have to have a report by the end of the summer for the Board of Governors to act on in the early fall, because they had to report back to the January 75 session of the legislature. Fordham then takes over, assigns Bill Cromarty, an associate dean, to run the 1-year program while planning the addition of the second year, and ask Leo to relieve Wally of any administrative responsibility, which Leo readily acceded to, in spite of mine and Wally's protests. Leo at that point was looking ahead to only 3 to 4 more years before he had to retire. He had become more and more aware of how Bill Friday operated as his boss. They were superficially pleasant and courteous and hated each other's guts. Leo was getting very antsy about challenging Bill Friday's authority. He had stopped going to the legislative building in 71, as soon as Friday took over as chief of the new university system. He would, down in his home territory, make challenging kind of comments, but not up in that arena in Chapel Hill. He waffled at every opportunity. The summer was spent arguing with Fordham, Cromarty, Sheps, Wally, Ed, occasionally Dean Hayek.
Horton Rountree said he was involved in the argument that summer too.
Refereed by Bob Holt. Hey.
Summer of 74.
Yeah, that was disappointing because everybody had been so upbeat in May of 74.
And they had mounted a counterattack, so to speak.
Yeah, and were pushing hard on control, making it almost impossible for me to communicate officially with Wally and any of the faculty. Mm-hmm.
Cromarty was between you and them.
Yeah. He and I would meet and shout at each other. We had shouting matches in Bob Holt's office across the hall from Jenkins' office, who stayed out of all this. They were meeting with the medical staff at the hospital, trying to convince them that the ECU plan was not the best way to go, that a one-year program and then clinical training here during third and fourth years was a much more reasonable alternative and really amounts to the same thing as a medical school, particularly if you'll agree to let us rotate some residents down here. Then you'll have the whole bag because you'll have an AHEC. They were talking to Goldsboro all that summer about trying to get them to start the AHEC. It was just a very busy, endless series of unpleasant meetings. The medical staff of the hospital, under the leadership of people like Jack Wilkerson and Earl Trevathan and Frank Longinot, looked at the proposed Chapel Hill plan to meet the legislative mandate and the ECU plan and voted virtually unanimously to support the ECU plan as the most feasible way to go. Mm-hmm. Cromarty and Fordham and Glenn Wilson were absolutely angry and frustrated. At some point toward the end of that summer, Fordham told Friday that there was no way to work with ECU to meet the mandate unless Chapel Hill maintained complete control, which Fordham pushed for, although he and his faculty generally wanted no part of a relationship. They felt if there had to be one, they were going to be in absolute control. I don't know what happened, but some legislative leadership talked to Bill Friday late in the summer or in early September and convinced him that he ought to back off and stop fighting and accept the inevitable. There was some inkling of that happening by rumor in late September, early October, but we were somewhat taken aback at the scope of his proposal to the Board of Governors in November that ECU be developed into a freestanding four-year medical school.
Did you hear
the cost figures attached to his report to the Board of Governors were somewhat on the high side, and we viewed them as an effort to convince the legislature it couldn't afford to do this.
$35 million?
New hospital, separate hospital. See, through this whole time, we were maintaining communication with the medical staff and the administration and board of the Pitt Hospital and the Board of County Commissioners to try to ensure that we all stayed on the same wavelength, all spoke the same tune, and believed firmly that an affiliated hospital relationship would not then require a separate teaching hospital. Mm-hmm. Wally did not agree with that. Mm-hmm. Two or three people on his faculty did not agree with it. Hayek did agree, and several other people on the faculty agreed. So we never had to really deal with that in a confrontation internally. Mm-hmm. So the Friday report to the Board of Governors in November 74 was a cave-in.
Excuse me one second. Had you heard anything about Ralph Scott intervening in this?
Yeah.
With the Friday?
Yeah.
I had some note about Ralph Scott's making a statement that they intended that the school become a four-year school.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He did.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so when Friday reported in November, you said it was a cave-in.
Yep.
Complete shift.
Yep.
at that point he became a plus instead of a minus.
Yes.
In public, anyhow.
Yes. And it was soon after that that I found out from his son-in-law, Al Woodworth, that Hal Wiggers was moving from Albany to retire to Greenville.
Hmm.
That was in early December, 74. He was here for Christmas. I met with him, recruited him, and in January 75, he came to work as a consultant, an acting dean. I don't think Wally's ever really forgiven me for that. I think that he, deep inside, felt that he should have been reinstated as the dean.
He's a great admirer of Wiggers, apparently. But he's not happy about that whole year.
No.
Not at all.
I mean, I think he blames me for Jenkins selling out in early summer and moving Wally out of any position of authority.
He doesn't indicate it. He did say one interesting thing that I wanted to try to get you to elucidate. He said that someone, and as I recall it, it was a member of the legislature, had said to you and him that if you succeed, you will be out of a job. You, talking to the two of you.
And I don't remember who that was.
Who it was. He didn't either. But he said that someone said at that time, quite truthfully, that if they succeeded, if you succeeded in overcoming Friday's and his crew's objections, you might as well write it off because you would never, you know, that you would really be out.
Yeah, well, we both knew we'd be persona non grata.
Knew you would be, yeah. You accepted it.
Any way, shape, or form as far as the UNC system leadership was concerned. I don't think either one of us realized quite how deep and bitter those feelings of getting beat were. But they surfaced periodically when an opportunity arose to do something to keep you from getting certain positions. They never missed an opportunity. I don't know whether Bill Lopas will have anything to say for the record about the content of any conversations he had as he became dean, conversations with Friday and or Dawson related to what to do with people like Monroe and Wolves.
I doubt that he will ever say anything.
He might.
But it seems to me that the pattern of behavior that developed, not with him only, but with the entire university at that time, indicate that there had been some conversations in any case.
So
after that,
Wiggers came.
Wiggers came
and helped select the dean through the spring of 75. He and I resisted a move to have the search committee anoint an individual from Stony Brook, Long Island, whose name was Micellus, M-E-I-S-E-L-A-S. Bill Lopas surfaced as a candidate in about April 75, when he was serving as a consultant in planning additions to the hospital, which was already under construction. He was a pediatric consultant and let it be known to several of us that he was willing to be considered. The surgical consultant and the medical consultant were well ensconced where they were and had no interest in that kind of job. Bill agreed to come in, I guess, late May or June 75. We had to scramble to find the money to make the salary suitable, with Friday resisting. By that time, the Brody family had given us a contribution for the medical foundation of a fair amount of money as sort of a beginning expression of support. And we used that money to supplement the dean's salary for a while. The one-year program stopped at the end of spring 75. And we were hoping to get students admitted in the fall of 76, but had to put it off to the fall of 77 because the Liaison Committee on Medical Education made us run around the corral a few times and pay homage to their authority. And Bill smartly did not challenge them or confront them,
sure,
but did everything they said we had to do. And that's a good stopping point.
That's a good place. Wonderful. Matter of fact, that was what I hoped we'd